Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2015, number 8. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Of course, the Remington Trophy is a big presentation that goes on in Lincoln. This year's Remington Trophy presentation is January 16th at the Rococo Theater, and it benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Of course, the Boomer Esiason Foundation is a dynamic partnership of leaders in the medical and business communities, joining with a committed core of volunteers to heighten awareness, education, and quality of life for those affected by cystic fibrosis, while providing financial support to research aimed at finding a cure. Again, the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 16th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Good to have you along for another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. I'm Travis Justice. As the Huskers get ready to go on the road for the very first time this year, our own Dr. Rob Zadiska is on the road as he is reporting in via the Skype tonight. And Rob, good to have you along, my friend.
Dude, it's always good to be along.
Isn't it, though?
It is. I'm not sure what the heck that means to be along, but I am.
You know, the Huskers are getting ready for that first road game of the year. Mentally, what goes through the process of getting ready for a road game?
You know, there's not a... I got to be honest with you, it's not that much different from a home game, and I think a lot of that has to deal with the fact that at least when I played, and still to this day, a lot of teams do this, they'll always kind of sequester players in a hotel. The home team gets sequestered in a hotel night before the games. And I think the idea behind it is let's make sure everybody's tied down and nobody's going to go get in trouble the night before a game. That being said, I think the secondary benefit of it is the fact that it takes you out of your normal day-to-day routine just enough. You're packing an overnight bag. You're going and staying in a hotel. You're taking buses to and from the stadium, etc. So whether it's a home game or an away game, you get some of these kind of common routines. The biggest difference is the game itself when you're actually playing a football game in a different place. I think that's what throws you off more than anything. Now, most of the time I was playing, I really didn't think it was that big a deal to go into another stadium unless it was a place that was just a horrifically hostile crowd. I'm using alliteration with a letter H here. Places like that, truly, you know, you think of the really, really nasty crowds in college football. As much as most fans like to think of their home stadium as a tough place to come play, most places really aren't all that bad for the most part. The two places that come to mind were Colorado in the late 80s, early 90s. They're obviously a far cry from that now, but when you literally got whiskey bottles getting chucked out of the stands down upon you on the sidelines and nobody is doing anything to stop it, that's a tough place to play. Miami used to be an incredibly tough place to play. That's changed hugely since they demolished the old Orange Bowl Stadium. God bless that place. That used to be a really tough place to go play a football game. I don't know if it really is anymore. It'll be interesting to see what kind of crowd shows up for the game this Saturday, because you know what? Miami came into that Nebraska game in Lincoln last year, and Miami treated it like it was a big deal. They treated it like this was a big game to play Nebraska in Lincoln is a big deal. And for Nebraska, I think it was. I think Nebraska and Miami have kind of this odd history. Miami's got a great history with a very few number of teams. Florida, Florida State, Notre Dame, maybe Penn State, and I think you can probably throw Nebraska into that mix. I mean, Nebraska and Miami have played at least three bowl games that have resulted in a national title. It gives you a little bit of history when you do that. And so Miami treated that game in Lincoln last year as a big game. It'll be interesting to see what happens this year. I think Miami, the team itself, is going to treat it like a big game because they've really played nobody up to this point. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't even tell you who they played. I know they played Florida Atlantic last week, and then I think it was Furman, maybe?
No, they beat Bethune-Cookman 45-0.
Bethune-Cookman.
And then they beat Florida.
I couldn't even tell you where Bethune-Cookman is at.
And then they beat Florida Atlantic 44-20. Of course, you can find out all about the Nebraska-Miami game leading up to the contest and after the game at HuskerMax.com. HuskerMax.com proudly, I think they do at least proudly, puts out our podcast each and every week. And of course, when you're looking for up-to-date news that is updated in a second, you need to go to HuskerMax.com. You bring up that rivalry. Is this game look better on paper between the two names than it really does on the field, because it has that Nebraska-Miami matchup to it?
You know, it does. Now, obviously, this isn't Nebraska of 1983, 1988, even 91 when Nebraska played Miami in the Orange Bowl. I mean, you got to keep in mind that 1991 1991 Nebraska team, I mean, we were a conference championship team that year and beat some very, very good teams that season. It's a different time period for Miami as well. I mean, this is not the Miami of old. I mean, this is a team that, boy, it wasn't until really you got about two-thirds of the way through the third quarter of that game against Florida Atlantic that they were really able to even put Florida Atlantic away. So it's not the same Miami team that you used to see. I mean, this is a Miami in their heyday would have taken somebody like Florida Atlantic and hung 70 points on them, not 40-some. I mean, that's a big difference in my mind. So it's not the same teams. Now, I think the two teams look at each other, and I think the teams themselves kind of view this as a bit of, I truly don't want to call it a rivalry game, but it's two teams, and these two teams have some history together. And the history has been very significant. Like I said, you've got at least three games where this game has resulted in a national title team. Actually, four. I forgot about after the 2001 season. So you've got four games here between these two teams from wholly, completely different parts of the country. And they've got a really, really strong, very, very significant history. When Miami and Nebraska have played each other, when you figure it out, I think this is the 10th or 12th meeting between these two teams. Fully a third of those meetings have resulted in a national title. That's pretty significant history. And so I think the players look at this as a big game. And I think for a team like Nebraska this year, I think Nebraska is probably pretty safe that they're going to come out of the non-conference schedule at worst 2-2. It'd be very nice to come out of the non-conference schedule 3-1, and to do that, they have to beat Miami.
Of course.
And so Nebraska's got a lot riding on this game. I think the fact that it's Miami, which they're not the same Miami, it still doesn't change the fact it's Miami, though.
Of course, Rob and I, when we cut the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, we're usually sitting here drinking some beer from the Benson Brewery, but not today. But I can tell you, maybe the next recording that we do next week, either on Monday or Tuesday, you might be able to come to the Benson Brewery and see Rob and I record our podcast live on location. But of course, did you know the Benson Brewery at 6059 Maple in Omaha is actually housed in a remodeled 1910s movie theater? The Benson Brewery turns out to be a century meets modern restaurant and brewery specializing in artesian food, house beer, and a cozy neighborhood brew pub. You got to go there, 6059 Maple. It is the Benson Brewery. Now, Rob, you look at Miami, you look at Nebraska, Mike Riley starting fresh in year number one. What Miami's playing for is Al Golden. Al Golden is believed to be on the hot seat at Miami.
I got to be honest with you. I'm surprised. Well, I shouldn't say surprised. I spoke with a handful of Miami fans in Lincoln before and after last year's game. And it was interesting to me because most of the Miami fans said at that time that they felt that the guy was just a little in over his head. They thought, you know what, go to a place like Temple, knock off Penn State every 3 years, and kind of run the show in a school like that. They thought he was great for a program of that caliber. They think he's in over his head. I'm not sure I disagree with that, with that assessment. Like I said, that's coming from fans I talked to on the street last year. You've got a program that, even when you look at Miami right now, the cupboard is far from bare there. They have some absolutely outstanding athletes. And I'm not just talking about Kaya at quarterback. They've got some incredible speed in their defensive backfield. They've got a somewhat untested offensive line and defensive line, but the guys are ball players. They're very, very good athletes. And that's something that I think people usually always expect when you look at a team from South Florida, is the fact that you got a team that's going to be a very athletic team, a very fast team. He just hasn't put it together on the field yet. I'm a little surprised by that, because everybody says he's an incredibly intelligent coach. He's a very heady guy. I think he knows what he's doing, but he's got this incredible collection of athletes, but he just hasn't been able to put it together with a whole lot of success on the field. And then they're 2-0 coming into this game, which is obviously better than Nebraska. I hate to say it, Nebraska's played a tougher schedule than Miami has at this point.
I would agree with that.
So it is. The guy's on the hot seat, and I don't think the season's going to go well. The fact that Florida Atlantic took these guys well into the third quarter before Miami was finally able to pull away, I think says something. And frankly, it was kind of some ill-timed turnovers that doomed Florida Atlantic. It wasn't like Miami wore these guys out with their incredible athleticism. They got lucky a couple of times on some turnovers, and that's what ended up allowing Miami to pull away.
Of course, Miami's going to be out without Darian Owens, a sophomore linebacker, for the remainder of the season. He went out with a knee injury. He got significant playing time as a freshman and a true contributor on defense as a sophomore, but already out for the season. So that's a setback for Miami. But a lot of the criticism of Miami is coming to where their offensive line needs to step up.
It does. Now, you look at both teams, and I think both Nebraska and Miami have a little bit of a maligned offensive line. Miami lost a ton of people to graduation on both of their lines, offensive line, defensive line, which, if you watch the Cowboys-Giants game, which I'm still smarting about because I'm a Giants fan, you got a Randy Gregory-Eric Flowers rematch in the Cowboys-Giants game, and Randy Gregory did to Eric Flowers as a Cowboy versus a Giant that he did against Eric Flowers as a Husker versus a Hurricane. So, but you've got an offensive line from Miami that it'll be interesting to see against what I hope is a better defensive line than what Miami has faced thus far this season. Hopefully guys like Valentine and Malik Collins are going to be able to get some push up the middle and cause some problems in Miami's backfield during this game. At the same time, you look at what Nebraska's offensive line does, and honestly, I think they've done some things well. I thought they did things well against South Alabama, and now it's always kind of a crapshoot when you're playing a South Alabama team that I'm not sure anybody looks at and goes, these guys are a great football team. I actually had a chance to speak to a guy that I work with who graduated from South Alabama, and he said even when he attended South Alabama, they referred to it as South Alabama High School. And he was obviously kind of cracking jokes about the quality of athletics there. That being said, Nebraska did to a not very good team what a team like Nebraska should do to a not very good team. I mean, you don't want to see Nebraska going out and having games like they did against South Dakota, games like McNeese State last year, teams like, you know, Maine, Ball State. Nebraska's had kind of this weird track record of not playing well against 1AA teams and poor 1A teams. Now, I say that, I understand we've kind of hit this time in athletics, football particularly, where everybody's got some athletes. Everybody's got a handful of ball players. I get that. But Nebraska should blow out South Alabama, and they did. And that's something that you want to see happen. And I think a lot of that started up front on the line. I thought Nebraska's offensive line did well. I thought they did some good things. Now, they weren't playing the caliber of athletes they did the week before against BYU. BYU's a hell of a lot better team than South Alabama. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I think in terms of overall athleticism, this will be the best athletes Nebraska will probably face, at least during the non-conference season, is what they're going to see down in Miami this weekend.
I know I want to keep talking about the Huskers and Canes, but you brought up the Dallas and New York Giants game. If you're an offensive lineman and you hear your quarterback tell a running back, hey, don't score when you're at the two-yard line and the game's not fully out of hand, what are you thinking to yourself?
The idiocy of that just makes me want to pull my hair. I got to be honest, I'm still so freaking pissed about that damn game. Now, there's times that matters. Now, this was a situation where if the Giants scored in that Giants-Cowboys game, it creates a true two-score game. Now, I know that's going back and forth. I don't know if the guy scores or not. I mean, if you look at it, Dallas's defensive line got some great push on that play and hit him before he ever crossed the two-yard line. So I'm not sure a great effort by the Giants running back, by Rashad, would have been able to carry him over into the end zone for a touchdown. But either way, the Giants kind of botched that entire drive, because I'm sitting there thinking they had multiple opportunities to burn off over a full minute of clock and didn't do it. Now, you could have burned off a full minute of clock. Dallas scored that winning touchdown with 7 seconds left. Dallas should have run out of clock about the time that they crossed their own 35-yard line. So it was a bad call. The timing was not right. There's situations where that's a feasible argument to make, the whole don't score because we can burn off more time, or don't score because we can force them to burn another timeout. That comes into play when you have a more than two-score lead, where a more than a one-score lead, when you've got at least a two-score lead, and the Giants did not have a two-score lead. They were up by 3 points at that point. The Giants needed to score a touchdown and turn it into a two-score game, and it wasn't that. So anyway, as you can tell, I'm still a little ticked off about that whole Giants-Cowboys game.
Of course, the Huskers not at home this weekend. They're going to be playing at Miami against the Hurricanes, but that does not mean you cannot go to the Chicago Doghouse at 3157 Farnham in Midtown Crossing in Omaha. I talked to Kelly Keegan over the weekend, Rob, and he was so happy because Glenn Mason stopped by from the Big Ten Network and had a butkus, talked his ear off and enjoyed it, and a handful of people came up to him and got a Chicago dog because they heard it right here on the Husker Doc Talk podcast. So Kelly's loving life when he's got the weenie wagon set up down in Lincoln. He had Glenn Mason stop by. He made him a butkus, and lots of people who listen to this podcast stopped by and had a hot dog from Kelly Keegan. And
I played against Glenn Mason.
Oh, did you?
Well, he was the coach of Kansas at the time when I was at Nebraska. And so, actually, that is very cool.
Yeah, it is. And Kelly said he talked his ear off. He wouldn't leave. He wanted to have a butkus and just talk football. And if you know Kelly, he likes to talk as well. So it's good to if you're craving a hot dog, get to the Chicago Doghouse at Midtown Crossing in Omaha. So it was fun to see last week against South Alabama. As Miami preps for Nebraska, they're going to have to look at Terrell Newby, who goes for 28 carries, 198 yards. He's the co-offensive player of the week at the Big Ten. It's nice to see a guy get that many carries, carry the load, get a rhythm, and put some serious yardage on the board.
Well, and I think that's something that's kind of hurt Nebraska over the last few years. When they had Amir Abdullah, obviously you'd put Amir into the game and you'd leave him in and let him work. But Nebraska's had a number of times over the last few years where they've had a handful of running backs. You're never exactly sure which guy's going to be the breakout guy. At some point, you got to put one guy in the game and give him time to establish a rhythm, and I really appreciated the fact that they did that with Newbie and gave him a chance to do that. If you got a guy who's probably your main guy, which I think that they're looking at, Newbie's the starter. He is the starting running back for Nebraska. You got to give those guys the time to be able to establish a little bit of a rhythm. Now, you're usually able to tell early on, mid-first quarter or so, that, okay, this guy's just, he just doesn't have it today. Fine, put another guy in. I get it. If it's Imani Cross, if it's Adam Taylor, go ahead and put the next guy in. The thing is, though, is I thought Nebraska did it right. They put Newbie in. They gave him the chance to kind of get that rhythm going. Imani's a senior. You get down at the goal line, Imani's a bit of a load. Put him in, let the senior score the touchdowns. It was great. I was happy for him. Both guys get to bask in a little bit of glory. That's a very good thing. And so I thought they did it right just by giving him the chance to get that rhythm going, because it is something that's important. I think a lot of people kind of discount that. They think you show up, you play. Sometimes it takes you a few snaps, and if a guy gets a rhythm going, you do not want to take him out of a game under any circumstances. And I thought they did a great job with that with Newbie. And I think some of that even goes back to what we talked about last week, where they really were not subbing much on the offensive line either. Now, again, if you've got 6, 7, maybe even 8 offensive linemen that you really trust and are playing well together collectively as a larger group, go ahead and play all 7 or 8 offensive linemen. If you've got 5 offensive linemen and they're playing well together, same thing with the running backs. Don't upset that rhythm. And I thought it was a combination of the fact that you weren't trying all of these different combinations of offensive line. You weren't trying these different combinations of running back. Getting that rhythm definitely has a time and a place, and I think Riley's doing it well right now with that.
Now, you like Miami's quarterback. Defensively, Nebraska's going to be challenged with Daniel Davey in the secondary in the cornerback position. They're going to go after him, aren't they?
Oh, they're going after him right away. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because Nebraska's got some good young guys at cornerback, and it'll be interesting to see if you see some of these guys getting in there right away in this game. If it looks like it's a situation where Davey's not necessarily getting picked on, but getting picked on and not responding. If this is a guy who they're throwing at and he's not making the plays, you're going to start seeing 2, 3, 4 different guys rolling in there and getting some playing time.
Dr. Rob Zadisk is always full of good information and great opinions. So as we've talked about the offense, we've talked about the defense. So give me your keys to victory for Nebraska.
I think they've got to be able to, even more than stopping Kaya, more than playing well in the defensive backfield, I think the biggest thing is that they've got to control the clock. I think Nebraska's got to be able to run the ball. And I think if Nebraska can get in there, establish a bit of a ground game, that plus the turnovers were the things that won this game for Nebraska last year. Nebraska controlled the clock, controlled the ground game, and they did a great job of running the ball. I mean, Miami's defense was just flat out embarrassed last year in Lincoln, and it was because they gave up a lot of yardage on the ground. If Nebraska can go out and do that again on Saturday, that's going to be an absolute game changer. Now, if Nebraska can't do that, Miami gets to control the clock, and you've got Kaya sitting back there behind an okay offensive line and can just sit there and pick apart Nebraska's defense. Any quarterback is going to be able to control, is going to be able to pick apart a defense. You give him enough time, any quarterback's going to do that. I think Kaya is a very good quarterback. He's a very athletic quarterback. You give that kid time, he's just going to pick apart Nebraska secondary, even if it's not Davey, he's gonna pick apart Nebraska's defense. And so I think if Nebraska can control the clock, run the ball on the ground, that's going to be the huge thing. The other thing is just getting some pressure on Kai in the passing game. You know, Nebraska has who they have in the defensive backfield. I do think that if Davey gets picked on and doesn't respond, you're going to see a couple of other guys working their way in. But I think the bigger issue is if Nebraska can get a little bit of pressure on Kaya, force him to run out of the pocket, force him to throw on the run, which he does pretty well. I'm not saying the kid's not athletic. The guy can run like gangbusters. The guy can throw on the run. However, if you can force him out of the pocket, force him to throw in situations that he doesn't necessarily want to throw in, then you're going to have – I think Nebraska's going to do well then. Get him out of the pocket. Make him run. Don't let him sit back there and pick Nebraska apart, because that's where Nebraska's going to get killed. You give a quarterback enough time, you're going to have a repeat of that BYU game where Tyler Mangum sat back there in the fourth quarter and had time on those last couple of drives to do some serious damage. And that's what you want to avoid. Get in his face, make him run around, take him out of his rhythm a little bit, and give your defensive backs a little bit of a break.
Of course, if you like what you're hearing from Dr. Rob Zaniski, you can also follow him on Twitter. He's very active on Twitter, at DocTalkSports. Don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 16th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. It's a night of stars, and it's not just about the Remington Trophy presentation. We also have the Ford Award, which goes to many past legends who played the center position. Last year's winner was Courtney Hall. Other winners include Dermonte Dawson, Jay Hilgenberg, Mick Tinglehoff, former Nebraska great, Dwight Stevenson. Lots of great former centers also honored with the Ford Legends Award. So don't forget, January 16th at the Rococo Theater Lincoln, it's the Remington Trophy presentation. Dr. Rob and myself will both be there as well. Dr. Rob, always good talking to you, my friend. We'll watch him take on the Canes, and then we'll be back again next week with another Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.